I'm Tori.
And I'm Audrey.
And we're two sisters diving into the darker side of human nature and exploring the unknown.
From chilling true crime and gruesome murders
to spine-tingling paranormal encounters, we cover it all.
So grab a flashlight
and maybe a blanket
because you're listening to
The Guilty and the Ghostly.
God.
Okay, well,
that was funny.
Another episode of the day, another sleigh.
We're here. And we have a special guest.
We do have a special guest.
Say hi.
Hi.
I brought my friend Elizabeth today with us.
She just graduated.
Yeah, just Guatemala.
We've been busy, so we normally release on Monday morning.
Yeah.
It is currently 9:09.
On Sunday night.
On Sunday night. And we have to record and I have to edit.
But we're here and we're going to get it done.
We're going to do it. Episode 5. So this one's also a long one.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
That's why I wanted my friend to sit in.
It's a hard one too. So today it's going to be true crime.
So no paranormal.
No paranormal.
Awesome.
Yep. Amazing. So I am doing the disappearance of Brandi Wells.
Ooh.
Girl. Yes.
Okay.
So I'm going to give you kind of like a little summary of Brandi, a little bit of her information, and then we'll go into her case. But like I said, her case is really long and there's a lot of information. Which doesn't make sense because we still don't know what happened to Brandi. We still have no idea where she's at.
Oh, so it's a mystery still.
Disappearance unknown. Yes.
It's a cold case?
Yes. So let's start off. 23-year-old Brandi Wells had recently moved from San Antonio to Brownsboro, Texas.
Oh, hey! My goodness.
She was trying to take the next step in her life after a divorce. She and her family were excited to have her back. She and her family were excited to have her back close by after she had moved out of the area a few years ago. Feeling optimistic about her future and getting in a job and being accepted into college at TVCC, she decided to go out one more time before her life got busy. She decided to go to an unfamiliar bar in Longview, Texas that night and was never seen again. After many false leads, confusing evidence, and errors made during the investigation, her fate is still unknown. So this is very timely because,
yeah, this is actually crazy because it's in our hometown.
It's a girl that
I've never heard about it.
I don't either. Which I was around this point in time, but I don't remember hearing anything about it at all.
Yeah, I don't either.
So let's just start with who Brandi was. So Brandi was born on November 28th, 1982 in Tyler, Texas. She was raised by her mother, Ellen Tant, and stepfather, along with her older brother, and she had a younger sister. She had a really close relationship with her stepfather. She pretty much considered him dad, and he considered her his daughter. Like, there was no step or anything to them. They were just family. They were considered a blue-collar family. Brandi was also considered a very innocent girl with a love for life. She was known to have extreme self-control, which I've got to ask, like, girl, what's that like? Because I have no self-control.
Yeah.
She was loved to be around others. She really enjoyed reading. She was very religious, spent a lot of time in church, and was involved in the youth group. Brandi would contribute a lot of her time helping in the community with her best friend, Janelle. They were more like sisters than friends and continued their close friendship even into adulthood. At a young age, she fell in love with music and began playing flute in the sixth grade. She also sang in the choir at church and in school. She would always joke that she wanted to become a country singer and even mentioned wanting to write her own music one day. As she got older, she decided she wanted to become a teacher, following in her grandmother's footsteps. She was always trying to help others and even took part in a mentor program at her Chapel Hill High School. So she went to Chapel Hill.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is very much home. We are from Brownsboro, grew up in Brownsboro.
I currently live in Tyler.
Yeah. It's very close to home, which really surprises me that I never heard about this until I heard about it a couple of years ago.
Do you know how many like cold cases are in Tyler?
A lot.
It's kind of
even
too many.
And
if that
even
makes sense, like
yes,
a concerning amount.
And even here recently, because you've got Brady Booth who went missing Brownsboro, I believe.
Yes.
You've got what's his name? Harley. Harley Morris missing from Tyler, which kind of like this girl, they have him on video leaving the club and then never seen again. And that just happened in Tyler not too long ago. Earlier this, I think the end of last year is when it happened. Mm-hmm. So
that's crazy.
Yeah. And that's another one I'd like to cover. So they would help other kids with their schoolwork. They tutored the younger kids and she absolutely loved it. She was very active throughout high school and she soon joined the Flag Corps. She always strived to be more, like it was never good enough for her to just do the bare minimum. She always wanted to do more than what was expected.
Yeah.
She was very determined and constantly practiced. She soon became one of the star performers and she earned a scholarship to go to college. She lived on campus, but then she would return home on the weekends and she just kept her life busy with friends, studies, and was just really enjoying her newfound independence.
Yeah.
She was really succeeding and accomplishing each step to become a teacher. While attending college, she would meet her future husband. After getting married, the young couple soon moved to Dallas and started working on their future. But
what was her husband's name?
I don't have her husband's name. And he, from everything that I read, he had nothing to do with what happened. Unfortunately, they began having financial struggles and ultimately Brandy decided to withdraw from college to work full time. Brandy's mother, Ellen, she was worried and didn't want Brandy following in her footsteps of starting a family really young and not finishing out her dream of one day becoming a teacher. But she supported her regardless and was just happy that Brandy has already accomplished everything that she had. Brandy got a full-time job to help make ends meet, but unfortunately, it just was a lot of stress on the couple. And after about 2 years, they decided to divorce. So
that's really sad.
That is, and being so young, you're so in love at first, and then things get hard. You grow into a different person, even within a couple of years.
Yeah.
So I imagine that was hard, and then you don't want to be seen as a failure, or you didn't do good, you know, didn't give your all, and then.
How young were they when they divorced?
Early 20s, because she was 23 when she went missing.
Yeah, that's crazy, because getting divorced that young.
That's like
that
having a
sense.
Whole life before you're even
30.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Brandy then moved in with a friend in San Antonio. Their friendship then turned into a romantic relationship and they began dating. They weren't together very long when the boyfriend had decided to join the military, but then he was deployed overseas. They ended the relationship and Brandy began trying to figure out her next move. She finally decided to move closer to home and moved to an apartment in Brownsboro with a friend.
Hey, I wonder if it's the apartments right beside the
school. By the school? Yeah, because I don't think those other ones were up yet.
They weren't.
Yeah. Her and her family were really excited to have her back, and she was excited to get back on track. After being out of school for 2 years, she decided to reach out to the college band director at TVCC to see if she could still use the remainder of her scholarship. They told her that she would have to try out again, but if she made it, she could use the scholarship to finish out school. So she was really excited about that.
That's awesome.
That is. She worked her ass off and she to come back and try out again. She was really nervous, though, returning to something that she hadn't done in a few years because she hadn't practiced or worked with it or anything. And then with all the other girls and coming right out of high school, they've had all that practice. They're still in the routine. She was really nervous about it, but it reignited a fire in her, and she tried out, and she made it and was accepted into TVCC.
And this was band?
Flag Corps.
Flag Corps, okay.
So she also secured a new job at Walmart at that time, and so everything seemed to be going in the right direction, but all that would change on Wednesday, August 2nd of 2006.
Oh, thank you.
So this is where everything starts going downhill. So girl has lived a whole life, went through a marriage, going to college, happened to quit college and, you know, help provide for her family. It didn't work out. Then had to have a divorce. She went down to San Antonio, lived a little life down there, and now she's back home. She's back on track. She's like, I'm going to take this next step for my life.
But it all goes downhill?
But then it all goes downhill. So Wednesday, August 2nd, 2006, Brandy made a surprise visit to her mom. Brandy wanted to spend some time with her family before her schedule was packed full of school and work. She went into her sister's room to hang out. She came back out of the room, but this time she was wearing a little something-something. She had changed into, this is so 2000s coded, she was wearing a cream-colored tube top along with the rust-colored gaucho pants.
Oh my gosh.
And black platform sandals.
Oh.
So girl was, that was the it outfit at that time too, yeah. Early 2000s. I bet she
had choker. I wish those pants would come back into style.
They were so comfortable. I don't think I could pull them off anymore, but yeah, I agree. She showed off her outfit to her mom. The mom remembered her outfit, like down to the detail, because Brandy was, you know, super excited to go out. She then set her makeup bag down on the table and started to discuss what she was going to do that night. She basically just told her mom that she was going to go out with some friends, have a few drinks, hang out, try to celebrate before going back to school and starting her new job. Brandy even had asked her little sister if she wanted to go with her, but her little sister wasn't feeling well and just decided to stay home and didn't go, which that, knowing now what happened, that has to be hard on her sister to know that she could have went with her. What if? What if she would have went with her? Yeah, what if?
I think everybody would think that.
Yeah. And
even
obviously.
The mom, like,
yeah.
Oh, what if I wouldn't have told her to go, you know?
So Wednesday night was often considered ladies' night at the clubs and bars. I think it still is.
It's Thursdays.
I thought Thursday was college night.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
They have a Wednesday night?
Yeah. So Brandy wanted to take advantage of that since money was tight. She even asked Ellen to borrow a few bucks, but Ellen said she didn't get paid until the next day, so she really didn't have the money to give her.
Ellen
is her mom.
Her mom.
Yep.
Okay.
Ellen's her mom. So after she told her she didn't really have the money to loan her, they just kind of kept talking. Brandy never really specified where she was going. To Ellen, Ellen just kind of assumed she was going to the Electric Cowboy in Tyler, where she would normally go. But Brandy told her mom goodbye, headed out the door. Brandy stopped by a bowling alley and happened to see an old friend who worked at the bar. Brandy told Janet, which is the old family friend, that her mom told her that she could get a drink and then put it on her mom's tab so she didn't have to pay for it. Like, I see you, girl. I see you. I would do that sometimes when mom had a regular bar. I'd go in there and be like, Mom, so put it on her tab.
For real?
Yeah.
Well, Mom, if you're listening.
Don't tell Mom.
She's gonna know.
Don't tell Mom.
You see that Facebook post?
Yeah.
Even Tamara commented.
I know. So Brandy told Jeanette that her mom said she could put her drink on her tab, and Brandy sat at the bar, caught up with Janet while she finished her drink. Janet later said that Brandy seemed just like her normal self, drank a cherry vodka sour. Janet had asked her what her plans were for the evening, and Brandy told her she was planning on going to the club in Longview called Graham Central Station. Janet knew that area and it was known to be rough, and it was about a 45-minute drive to get there. So Janet was a little worried and tried to convince Brandy not to go to that particular club, but Brandy just kind of shook her off and told her she knew how to take care of herself, everything's fine, she's just going to have some fun.
Rough meaning like a lot of fights or like...
Rough side of town, known like drugs.
Oh,
yeah.
Sketchy.
Okay. Very shady, yeah. So Brandy just shook her off, told her she knew how to take care of herself, it was fine. Brandy only drank about half her drink before she decided to go, and then they said their goodbyes, they gave their hugs, and Brandy left. So she didn't even finish the whole drink. She only drank about half of it before leaving.
Okay, so she's definitely not intoxicated.
Definitely not intoxicated at this point. So let's jump to the next morning. August 3rd, a trooper spotted an abandoned vehicle on I-20 on the side of the road. The trooper stops to check it out and sees that the driver's door is partially opened, and by the looks of the vehicle, it does not look like it was purposely parked on the side of the road. It almost looks as if it rolled off the road and it stopped in the weeds. And the trooper runs the plates. Nothing comes back on it. So he just places the abandoned sticker on the window and goes on about his day, which I sent you a picture of her car.
What is an abandoned?
It's just a sticker. Like, if you pay attention when you're driving down the road and you see a car there, if it's there for like a couple of days, they'll actually put a sticker on it with a date so that they know how long it's been there. And I think they have so long to come get it before they will tow it off. That's her car that he found abandoned on the side of the road.
They don't, like, tow it, though, the first time they find it?
No, they give the car owner some time to come get it because, you know, your breakdowns happen and you have to go get a tow truck.
We saw a breakdown somebody. Today.
Did you?
Yeah.
Was it you? In your car?
No, it was this lady and her son. We went and asked her if she needed any help.
That's how you get murdered.
Oh. Okay. The guilty and the ghostly.
The guilty and the ghostly. Brandy's mom, Ellen, wakes up that next morning to start her day, and she was actually kind of surprised to see Brandy's makeup bag was still on the table, and Brandy was nowhere at the house. She wasn't sleeping on the couch. She kind of checked the bedroom. She wasn't in the bedroom. Brandy wasn't there. And at first, she really wasn't surprised. She just assumed that Brandy stayed the night at a friend's house. So she leaves. She goes to work. Everything's normal. Until later that day, Ellen receives a call from Brandy's roommate that she was staying with in Brownsboro. They tell Ellen that they have not seen Brandy. She didn't come home last night, and they can't get a hold of her now.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So, since Ellen hadn't seen or talked to her that day either, she calls Brandy to see if she can get a hold of her, but it goes straight to voicemail. At this point, Ellen's thinking she was just at a friend's, didn't have a charger to charge her phone, so she's still really not super concerned, because again, she's 23 years old, she's an adult, she went out last night, you know how it goes.
Yeah.
So Ellen continues to call her, and she does start to get a little worried because her calls are still going unanswered. By Friday morning, Ellen is in a panic. She's called Brandy's godmother, Michelle. She tells her what's going on. And so the godmother, Michelle, starts calling Brandy. And between Ellen and Michelle calling, Brandy's voicemail becomes full and they can no longer even leave messages at this point.
Oh my gosh.
So Ellen decides to call the Tyler police to file a missing persons report because nobody's heard from her, nobody's seen her, they can't get a hold of her, calls aren't going through. So at this point, they realize something's wrong. They dispatch officers to Ellen's house, and while they're giving details to the police that Brandy was headed to Electric Cowboy, Brandy's little sister says, no, actually, she was planning on going to Graham Central Station in Longview. And of course, Ellen was upset because she's just now finding this out. This whole time, she thought she was just a couple miles down the road going to the Electric Cowboy, when in fact, she was 45 minutes away in Longview.
Oh my gosh. But she didn't lie about it, did she?
No, she didn't lie about it. She just really just didn't tell her mom where she was going. It was never mentioned. Mom just assumed. Brandy never said anything. So it was just kind of...
Yeah.
I guess not. I don't think it was purposely left out, but they don't really know either because they've never found Brandy. Again, the police just weren't really worried because she's an adult. She can go out. She can come back when she wants. Like, there's nothing against the law. There's not much that they can do.
But I hate that they do that because they should treat every case the same way they do.
Yes.
Any other case. Like, if it's a child, treat it the same way as an adult, you know?
Family
members are concerned.
Yes. And what's the worst that's going to happen? Oh, you find them, and yeah, sure enough, they partied a little too hard and were too hungover, and okay, you know.
I'd rather be safe than sorry.
Exactly. But again, they just said she's an adult. She can come and go as she wants. It's pretty common for that to happen. She's going to show up in a couple of days and it's all going to be fine.
Well, it's already been a day, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's Friday morning?
Yeah, she went missing Wednesday and this is Friday morning.
Okay.
So Ellen decided just to stay home in case Brandy calls, and Michelle decides to head to Longview to see if she can find Brandy or her car. When she gets to the bar, the parking lot is empty. There's no sign of Brandy. And she even kind of like walks the parking lot, and there's like a wooded area behind the bar. And she even walked back there just to see if maybe she could find, you know, find any evidence of Brandy, but she finds nothing. So while that's going on, the family calls and checks in at the police department. Still no leads, still no updates. The family then decide, well, let's create missing person flyers to pass out and try to get the word out, because they're not hearing anything from the police department. Nothing's happening. They haven't found anything. So let's just get her information out and see if we can't find her. So after a couple of days, after they passed out the missing flyers, they call the police again. And that is when they inform the family that due to Brandy disappearing from Longview, they really need to file the case there instead of Tyler. So they do. And again, the police in Longview have the same reaction. They aren't really concerned. It's a common case. They think that she'll just show up when she's ready. And so they take the case, but they don't really do anything with it.
That's crazy.
That would break my heart.
I feel like if they did that with Patty.
I know. I was thinking you, because I mean, especially now with you guys going out and stuff. Normally you tell me where you're going, but it just takes that one time. That one time.
Do you think they would treat my case the same?
With the way that Longview and Tyler Police Department's been going with all the missing cases, I don't have the best confidence in them. So.
Facts.
A couple more days go by, and the Longview police finally, they receive a phone call about an abandoned car on I-20. The caller states the car looks strange, they should come take a look, and when they arrive, they run the plates again. The missing persons case is finally linked to Brandy. It's Brandy's car that they found on the side of the road. They realize that it's been sitting on the side of the road for 6 days at this point. So they reach out to Ellen to let her know that they finally have located Brandy's missing car. The investigators start going through Brandy's car and looking for evidence. No signs of a struggle were really found, but there were a few things that were strange that they did find. One, they located Brandy's purse and wallet in the back seat. There was no cash. All that was in her wallet was her ID. So remember that. Her ID was in her wallet in her car. They find a cell phone, and it was kind of confusing. It was either in the floorboard or like by the shifter of the car. There was several different reports on where that was, but it was in like the front of the car that they found a cell phone. They also find a napkin with a name and number on it and a red 1 gallon gas can in the car. But her keys were not ever found. They did not find her keys inside the car. But according to the family, Brandy didn't own a gas can and had no clue where it would have came from. So that was odd. The police could not determine if the gas can had even been used. The driver's seat was pushed way back as if a taller person had been driving in it. Brandy was only about 5 feet tall, and it was like way too far back to where it would have been hard for her to drive the car with it pushed that far back. So either she had to push it way back to get when she got out, or somebody else was driving her car. They were also able to lift a partial thumbprint from the driver's side window. However, there were no other prints inside the vehicle. Almost like maybe it was wiped down, because wouldn't there be some kind of print somewhere on the steering wheel or gear shift or something? And Brandy didn't have a record, so they could not determine if the fingerprint that they found was hers or not. And due to the car sitting on the side of the road for a week, they also couldn't rule out contamination at this point. So with everything the investigators found, now they finally are saying, okay, this could be foul play. But at this point, they're nearly a week behind since she's gone missing.
Because they didn't take it seriously.
And just like they say, 48 hours. Those first 48 hours are a huge... After that, the chances of solving the case go way down. And at this point, it's 6 days. So...
Did they ever, like, I don't know, sue the police for that? can you sue the police for that?
No. I don't, well, I don't know.
Because I feel like they handled that case very poorly.
Oh, girl, there's more. You just wait. You are not prepared.
No, I don't want to be prepared. I don't want to know.
So,
angry.
You're going to be angry. Authorities were ready to move the car. They went to the dealership to get a key made. When they would start the car with the new key, it would only run for a few seconds and then it would shut off. So they thought, well, the car's out of gas, so they add gas to the gas tank. But that it didn't solve the problem. So here's another whoopsies. No one noted if the car had gas in it before they added gas to the car to move it. So no one even knows if it was even out of gas like they had assumed. So a few days later, they turned the car over to Ellen, who had it towed to a local shop. And remember, Ellen's her mom. That is when the mechanic informed her that it wouldn't stay running because of an anti-theft feature of the car. It required a special chip for the ignition to stay running. And when they had the copy made, they did not have them. They did not include the chip when they started the car or when they made the remade the key. So they had a chip made for it. They started the car. It started no problem. No issues with the car. It started fine.
Okay, so why was putting gas in it bad?
Because they didn't know. They didn't check to see if it was out of gas before they added gas to it. So that could have been a reason why it was stuck on the side of the road. If she would have ran out of gas, that would explain the gas can. Where'd she get the gas can? Who helped her? So...
Yeah.
And nobody noted if it had gas in it before they added gas to it.
So they're just basically walking all over this investigation.
Contaminating it even more. Yeah. So due to the authorities believing the car was out of gas, they decided to go to local gas stations to see if they could maybe find a lead or any video footage, but they did not find anything of her. They searched the area that the car was found and even brought tracker dogs, but again, it'd been sitting there for 6 days. During those 6 days, it had rained, and the car sitting there for so long, people are walking up and down the road, people are driving by, so there was literally no trail that the dogs could pick up, either because it'd been sitting there so long and it'd been so contaminated, or if Brandy was ever even in the car when it was dropped off, they don't know.
But they said it had a theft feature on it, right?
Yes, and her keys are missing.
So someone definitely stole her car.
And that's if she was with them. We'll get there. We'll get there. It'll make more sense here in a minute.
Okay.
So at this point, the trails ran cold. They have no other leads. They don't know what to do. So they reach out to the FBI, and the FBI begins to assist them. They were then dispatched to go to the bar that Brandy went to begin questioning employees, which, why didn't they do that before? Exactly. Why wouldn't they have done that before? And while others were starting to call the numbers that were on the cell phone that they found in the car and try to contact any people that were saved in her phone, and then they also contacted the name and number on the napkin that they found. They were able to bring the man in for questioning from the napkin that they found. And according to him, he saw Brandy at the bar, went up to her, offered a drink. She turned it down. She didn't want a drink, but they talked briefly and he wrote his name and number down and gave it to her. He also mentioned he had heard Brandy asking for gas money, and she may have even directly asked him for money, but he either didn't have money to give her, didn't give her money. It was never made clear as far as like if he helped her out or anything, but he as far as we can tell, he did not give her any gas money or anything.
What was his name?
They never released it. They did not release his name. So, and to me, that's shady. So you can buy her a drink, but you can't give her $5 for gas. That's kind of weird. But, again, she's not really drinking because he offered to buy her a drink. That's a free drink, but she turned it down. She didn't want it.
But he can't give her gas money?
Exactly.
That's really weird.
But without any further information, and he seemed like he was very forthcoming and telling the truth, they decided to let him go. So they let him go. We don't know what his name was.
Okay, I hate when police withhold information like that. If you are over the age of 18,
print that shit.
They should be able to release your name.
Yep.
If you are involved,
well, you say that too, but you also have these internet warriors, and if you release everybody's name just because they question you, they will hound you, and then they'll dox you, and then all of your information's out there, and you're connected with this case when you may have absolutely nothing to do with it. I mean, I understand both sides. It's very frustrating because you want to know the name, you want to know the information, but at the same time, if they really don't have anything, it's not really fair for them to have all their information connected to the case.
Yeah, well, I wonder if her mom even knew about
him. I don't know. It never said if her mom
knew. That's how I would want it to be, you know?
Yeah, at least let the parents know. So a few employees do remember seeing Brandy that night, but they do not remember anything unusual. They advise that she might have only had one drink while there, if she even had that. They did recall that she had to call two different times to get directions to the bar when she was on her way there. So when she was driving there, she wasn't familiar. She'd never been there. She did call the bar twice to get directions on how to get there. That sounds like Tori. So at the bar, they had a license swiper at the door to verify the age of everybody coming in. It showed hers was swiped at 10:44. So they pull the surveillance footage, and on the footage, they do see a woman that they think might be Brandy. She's seen outside talking to a man, and then again inside talking to another man. They show the footage to Brandy's godmother, her sister, and her sister-in-law, and they were kind of iffy. They're like, it maybe could be Brandy, but they weren't sure. And again...
And you sent me that picture, right?
Not yet. That one's not yet. There's more. Just wait. So they, in 2006, the security footage is very grainy. It's hard to make out details.
Yeah.
And so they were just like, it could be Brandy, but we're not sure. But the police really wanted to get the footage out to the public. And so they were basically like, we need a definite answer. Is it her or is it not? So they finally all agreed, yeah, it could be Brandy. So they went ahead and released the footage and aired it on the news that night. So Mama Ellen sees it and immediately realizes that woman is not Brandy. She resembles her, but she's not even wearing the same clothes that were that was described to the authorities that Brandy was wearing. Police are not sure what to do at that point, since this seemed to be the only lead that they had. They argued that Brandy could have just changed her clothes, and Ellen was standing her ground and said if that would have been the case, they would have found the clothes in the car, or a friend would have come forward by now saying they went and changed clothes together before going to the bar, but nobody had come forward yet. So while this is going on, the investigators that were following up on the phone were getting some strange answers when they were making contact to the people in the phone that they had found. Some people knew who Brandy was, but didn't know anything about where she was or what her plans were for the night. Others claim to not even know Brandy at all. So this is her supposed cell phone that they're calling people and they're asking about Brandy, and they have no clue who Brandy even is.
What?
We're getting there, girl. So meanwhile, Brandy's family is talking to the news source, any news source that they can. They're just trying to get her name out there. They're trying to get any leads that they can, but nothing's happening. So 2 weeks go by, and the investigators set up a meeting to get DNA to help with the investigation, just in case if they find a body, any other potential evidence that they can compare it to, they decide to meet up with Ellen to try to get the DNA. During this meeting, they show Ellen the cell phone that they've been using to locate the numbers. When she sees it, she lets them know, that's not Brandy's phone. They discover that the phone that they've been using was actually Brandy's ex's phone, who left for the military. I guess when he left, he just, either during the breakup, she ended up with his phone, or when he left, he asked her to hold on to it. It wasn't even Brandy's phone they were using.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And why are they not asking the mom or the sister or the godmother before they're doing all this?
These people are saying, who's Brandy? I don't even know who Brandy is. That should have been the first clue that something's up. Like, why would she have these people's number if they didn't know Brandy? That's crazy. Oh, they find out that Brandy's phone was actually on contract with that same ex's sister. So the police started to file a subpoena to get the phone records so that they can start researching it. But Ellen, being a fed up mom and just being like, screw this, I'm doing things my own way. She just calls the sister directly and just asks to have access to the records. And sister gave it to him. She gave him access. She printed off all the records for him. And so before the police could even finish filing the subpoena, Mama had the records.
Yeah, because Mom is trying to do more than the freaking police.
She's That's trying to find her kid.
Like,
so they started. Oh, yeah, I couldn't even imagine.
I would be fed up.
Yeah, it would be very frustrating to be like, okay, I'm doing all this, but this is actually your job, and I'm having to take matters in my own hands to find my child.
Like, you're getting paid to do this.
Yes, this is literally your freaking job. So they start going through the records and they show odd behavior once again. In the few days after Brandy had disappeared, there weren't any outbound calls from her phone until August 11th. 9 days after she was seen, there were multiple calls made using Brandy's phone. The calls only lasted about 2 minutes each, and there were several of them. Like, there would few minutes on this day, and then a couple hours later, a few more minutes, and then the next day it was the same thing. A bunch of short 2-minute phone calls. The investigators wanted to know who was using the phone and wondered if it had anything to do with her disappearance. With the calls only lasting a few minutes each and happening so frequently, they started to wonder if it was like maybe something with drug deals. They began calling the numbers that it was calling, and no one admits to knowing Brandy once again on the numbers that it was calling after her disappearance. Some of them even got angry and told them not to call them again. They were finally able to track down two people who were frequently being contacted, and they were brought in. It was a man and his niece. They told investigators that someone they know had found a phone. This person was known to the police already, and he was brought in for questioning. He told them that he'd been walking down the street around August 11th and heard a beeping noise, and he found a phone under the tree, and he decided to keep it. But however, if you remember, Brandy's phone was going straight to voicemail as if the battery was dead when her family was trying to get a hold of her. So not only that, but it had been raining. So where the phone was supposedly found was off the beaten path, just a few blocks from the exit that Brandy's car was found. So if her phone is supposedly dead, how did he hear a beeping noise? And where the phone was found at, it was kind of, like I said, it was kind of off the street a ways. So how did he find her phone?
Yeah, did the police not think that was suspicious?
No. He was very forthcoming again. So
yeah, he volunteered to come in for the interview.
So the first two people that they brought in to find out who this other guy was, they gave them a polygraph test and they passed it. The third man declined the polygraph, and with no further proof that he had anything to do with Brandy's disappearance, he remained a person of interest, but was never arrested. His name was never released, and the case begins to go cold, and no other leads develop. So again, case is going cold. They've brought these people in, and they're forthcoming. They're good old boys. They're just going to tell the truth. So we let them go and go on about their business. So at this point, Ellen is still caught up on the surveillance footage and is still not convinced the woman seen on the surveillance footage was her daughter. Frustrated with not having any progress made, the family requested to view all the footage from that night. Only 10 minutes into watching, they spot Brandy, and it's not the woman that they had been showing. The license swiper time was wrong, and it was showing 10:44. When Brandy actually entered the bar at 10:35, wearing the same clothes that Ellen had told them that she had been wearing.
Why was it swiped at that time?
Because the time was wrong. The actual clock on the swiper was wrong. So the swiper time and the surveillance time were two different times, because one of them was off by about 10 minutes. And there she was coming in wearing a white tube top and her rust-colored gaucho pants. So at this point, the family is completely frustrated with all the mishaps from the investigation. How could they not have reviewed the rest of the footage to verify if the original woman was Brandy or not? And at this point, it has been 6 weeks since Brandy disappeared.
Oh my God.
The footage shows Brandy entering the club alone. She spends the majority of the night by herself, and then she leaves. But this is where the family and the investigators have a difference in opinion. Brandy is shown to be walking out of the door of the club with a gentleman in a cowboy hat following very close behind her. In the footage, it shows Brandy going to the right and the gentleman kind of going to the left. But in the final seconds of the footage, you can just barely make out Brandy's feet, and she turns and begins going left towards where the man went. They're not sure if he called to her or if she went and she went towards him, or maybe she forgot where she parked and so she turned around. But it really looks like they start walking together just out of the camera footage. But law enforcement do not believe he's a suspect, but there's nothing to show that they ever even confirmed who the guy in the cowboy hat was. And this is, I don't understand, they used the swiper to confirm who Brandy was, where she was, and what time she got there. Why didn't they do the same for cowboy hat guy? Why haven't they pulled that information, talked to him, figured out who he was? Now, they might have, and maybe they just haven't released it, but that's kind of important information to release, saying, yeah, we checked this guy out, we got him, he has an alibi or something, so we wrote him off. But there's no other information. They're just like, oh yeah, he's walking right behind her, maybe, maybe not, she left with him, but never released on who he was or if he had anything to do with it. So family is once again very frustrated on how the investigation was going. They decided to take matters into their own hands. They were able to work with an organization called the Laura Recovery Center, and they searched the area where she was last seen to see if they were able to locate any evidence. They actually started at the club and then worked their way out towards Brandy's car where it was located just to see if they could find anything, but they couldn't. Her family, at this point, they're really sad that they haven't found anything, but hold on to hope that she might still be out there. So it's kind of like a, you know, a catch-22, I guess. They're sad they haven't found anything because they still have no answers, but that also gives them hope that maybe she's still out there. Then, in October of 2006, just 2 months after Brandy disappeared, a citizen called in to report a possible body burning. Due to the condition of the body, once they were able to put out the flames, they could not identify who it was. They also found a lavender top and pair of jeans. They created a facial reconstruction, and Ellen seen the resemblance to Brandy. They looked a lot alike. They submitted the DNA that she had given them and were able to determine it was not Brandy. However, that may sound familiar because we covered the case of Lavender Doe in episode 2. So go give that episode a listen if you haven't already, and you will hear about Joseph Wayne Burnett. He was convicted for the murders of Lavender Doe, who was later found out to be Dana Dodd and Felicia Pearson. Burnett denied having anything to do with Brandy Wells, but yet again, they said he was very forthcoming and didn't seem to push the case any farther. So,
and I mentioned that whenever we went over, if y'all haven't already watched the episode, whenever we went over the Lavender Doe case, there was a gas can cap found, but there was no gas can found.
Isn't that a weird coincidence?
That there was a gas can found in Brandy's car.
And a gas cap found at Lavender Doe's. Wild. Both in Longview. Brandy went missing August 2006 is when Brandy went missing. And Dana Dodd was found October 2006. So the discovery of Dana had a really big impact on Brandy's family. They were relieved it wasn't Brandy, but still have no clue what happened to her. they decided to have a memorial for Brandy to honor her and get her case more attention. While they were there, they met a woman who had allegedly spent time with Brandy at Graham Central Station that night, but she claims that they got to talking and realized there was a Hispanic man that was following them around the club. They became uncomfortable and decided to go hide out in the bathroom to kind of try to lose him. The family asked her to tell the story to authorities, but the woman said she didn't want to be involved. Which to me, okay, either she doesn't want to be involved, that's kind of shitty, or she's making it up, and weird people want to be involved in the investigation, so they make stuff up. So months went by, and a couple of small searches were done. Both searches had limited resources, though, because due to both times, they just so happened to take place when there had been a child missing, and most people were already out helping, searching for these children, and so they had very few people and found nothing for Brandy. After the final search in January, the case just kept growing colder with each passing day. It then turned into months, and then it turned into a year. Then, over a year later, a lead seemed to pop up. In North Carolina,
We're
going to go ahead and jump on up to North Carolina. An unknown woman filled out a job application and provided a local address in North Carolina. The social security number that was provided was Brandy's. Investigators went to the address that she had provided that was in an apartment complex. They knocked on the door and an ex-military man answered. He had just returned from active service. He had no connection to the supposed woman who completed the application or any knowledge of Brandy when they showed him her picture. They had never been able to identify the woman who used the social security number. They are unsure if she had something to do with the case or was she just guilty of identity theft. Since then, there has been no movement on Brandy's case. They are still working the case but have no updates. Any leads they would get, they investigate, but nothing's turned up. So here's our theories. Who's cowboy hat guy?
Joseph Wayne Burnett.
Could have been. He was tall. The cowboy hat guy was tall. I even pulled his arrest record because some people are like, oh, he was under arrest at that time. No, ma'am. 9/27, September 27th, 2006. He was arrested, but he was not arrested during August of 2006. So he was free when Brandy went missing in Longview. And another, you already mentioned the whole link with the gas can thing, which was weird.
And another thing, he picked up Dana at a Walmart in Kilgore.
So there's the Walmart.
And
the next thing is the whole money issue. Dana was supposedly working the Walmart trying to make money and needed to get more money. So she's asking Joseph Wayne for money to pay for, what was it, magazines I think she was selling or something like that. Brandy Wells was asking people for gas money because she didn't have enough gas to get home. So again, needing to make money to make it home.
Yeah. But the strange thing to me is that her body was never found.
Bodies never found. They never found her body. They never found her keys.
When they arrested Joseph Wayne, I hope they actually, you know, went through his apartment, did a full thorough search, and they didn't just have.
So here's the thing.
Because what if in his apartment they could have found keys?
Could have found evidence. And so they asked to remain anonymous. I've been communicating with this really sweet lady. She has insider information. We'll just leave it at that. She has very reliable insider information. And I can explain to you later. That when they arrested Joseph Wayne Burnett, they did ask him about Brandy. But they literally were just like, do you know anything about this? And he said no. And they were like, good enough. Moving on.
Are you serious?
They did not push it.
They
did not pressure him. Nothing. Did not. Not at all. And to this day, Brandy is still missing.
And to this day, Joseph Wayne Burnett is still locked up. And what county is it?
He's a Tennessee colony is where he's at.
Yeah.
So I guess that'd be Anderson, maybe.
So, I mean, can they open back up a case?
If they were to find evidence, but here's the thing. He's already doing life. Why would he admit to killing somebody if there is no evidence? They have no way to prove it. He has nothing to lose at this point.
Exactly. So why wouldn't he just admit to it so he
could give his family? Sick individual.
So they could give her family, like, closure and stuff. Like, that's horrible.
Yeah.
You're already in prison for life. Why didn't you admit to it
just
this time?
Just give Not them.
Not just one life sentence. Three. Yeah, he got convicted of three things.
Yeah.
Because he forgot to register as a sex offender as well.
Yeah. So, yeah, this case, one, because it's close to home.
Yeah.
Two, because it seemed like she was getting back on track. Not that she was, like, off track, but, like, she was doing what she really wanted to do and was making big moves. And this was her night to celebrate that. And something happened.
It ended up this way.
And her mom has no answers what happened to her daughter. So they are still actively working the case and accepting any and all information. Brandy was last seen August of 2006. She was 4'11", about 120 to 130 pounds, with dirty blonde hair, blue eyes. She would be about 42 years old this year. If you have any tips, please call Longview Police Department at 903-237-1199. So yeah, that's the story of Brandy Wells.
It's so sad. I wish we had a happy ending.
I know. Maybe one day. That's what I was thinking, is what if they find her? I mean, it would be devastating, because then it would be obviously set in stone, like, she's gone, but then you would at least have answers at that point.
But I mean, also, like, the way, like, if it was Joseph, we know how he tried to get rid of these girls.
Like, yep. There's just too many coincidences.
The same thing. Like, I feel like if he did murder her and everything, she would have been ashes by now.
Well, he didn't burn the other girl. He just dumped her off in a ditch.
What the hell?
Yeah, but I cannot believe he... Ugh. But, yeah, he just dropped that other girl off in the ditch, so he didn't try burning her. And if he got away with Brandy, if he was the one that Brandy met up with, he got away with it. And so quickly moved on to Dana Dodds, and... He did get away with it, but they found the body. So did it scare him for a little while? And so he waited, and then that's when he finally couldn't wait any longer, and then he killed Felicia Pearson? Like, did it scare him a little bit, so he pulled back for a while?
Because they did bring him in for questioning during Dana's...
Yep.
Yeah.
So.
During the case. And he denied it, too. He was like, yeah, I had sex with somebody this night, but I don't remember her name.
Yeah.
He knew.
He knew.
Because he's a sick dude. He's so creepy. Like,
yes.
Even looking at him makes me want to throw up.
Yes.
His mugshot is really ugly.
It is. But, yeah. So on a lighter note, next week, hopefully, we've got to go. We've been so busy, we have not been able to go out to where we want to for the next story. So hopefully we can figure that out this week and go do that. But we'll have another story one way or another next week.
And I mean, either way, it'll be good.
Have you seen about the Annabelle doll?
Yes, how they moved her to the prison.
She's missing.
So they took her to New Orleans, and like one of the oldest plantation houses burns to the ground while she's there. And now supposedly they're bringing her to Texas, and homegirl is missing. They have no idea where she's at.
What the helly?
What the helliante? So, yeah.
Scary.
That's crazy. Yeah. So, there we go. So, I guess until next week, enjoy your summer. Congratulations to all the graduates.
Yeah, my friend just graduated.
Elizabeth.
Peace. period, no more school. I had 96 absences, but hey.
Turn up.
So I guess we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Goodbye.
We out.
We're done.
Yum.
Now I have to edit all.